I now call the meeting of the Henderson City Council to order. Madam Clerk, will you please call the roll?
Mr. Kearney?
Here.
Ms. Coffey?
Here.
Mr. Inska?
Here.
Ms. Peace Jenkins?
Here.
Mr. Dagie?
Here.
Ms. Simmons?
Here.
Mr. Day? And we have a quorum.
And Mr. Rain is here.
I don't usually ask the mayor, so that's why I skipped over you. I'm sorry.
It's all right. We have a quorum. Now, if you'll all stand, I ask Ms. Peace Jenkins to lead us in invocation and pledge allegiance.
As we all bow our heads. Most gracious and kind God, we thank you once again for allowing us the privilege to come here and for the purpose that we're here. We thank you, God, for every person under the sound of our voice. Realizing that our mayor's not with us, we ask that you would just bless and touch him right where he is.
Yes.
That you would bless his wife as she continues to take care of him. And whatever he's dealing with and going through, God, that it would go expeditiously and he would be back in place where he should be.
Yes.
Then, God, we just ask that you would be with us as we go into the session of taking care of business. Lord, that you would lead, guide, and direct us. Give us wisdom, knowledge, and understanding that we will be with one mind, with one purpose, and with one accord. And all the things and decisions that we do will be pleasing to you and for the betterment of our city and our county. I pray this prayer in your most holy name, and we all say it. Amen.
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 As we turn our attention to the flag, I pledge
allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Play ball. I'd like to welcome everybody here tonight. I know it looks a little different. I am not Peter Gary, but just want to bring you up to date. Mayor Gary, as you know, is scheduled for surgery concerning his heart situation. And he's scheduled for February the 3rd is when he's going into the hospital. And he'll be in the hospital 5 to 6 days. So this is a serious and a major surgery. And we again ask you to keep him in your prayers and in your thoughts. And keep us in your prayers and thoughts. We try to keep the ship straight without the main captain here. He wishes he could be here tonight, and I wish he could be here as well. I will be presiding. So right now, Madam Clerk, we're ready to begin.
The first item is adjustments to and or approval of the agenda, and it has been asked that we add a closed session for an attorney-client matter.
Okay.
Do not anticipate the announcements.
There's closed session and with no announcements.
Move that the agenda be received with adjustment.
Motion been made by Ms. Peace Jenkins, second by Ms. Simmons, Mr. Day. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Madam Clerk.
The next item is approval of the minutes from the January 13th, 2014 regular meeting.
Are there any adjustments to the minutes? Deletions or corrections? If not, what is your pleasure?
Make a motion to approve.
Motion been made by Ms. Coffey.
Second
by Mr. Dagie. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed likewise. Madam Clerk.
The next item is public hearing, first and only being consideration of approval of Ordinance 1411. Amending the zoning map for a 0.43-acre tract located off Wilbur Street from I-2 Industrial Non-Park Zoning District to B-4 Neighborhood Commercial Zoning District, Vance County Tax Map 0083, Block 02, and Lot 002.
Mr. Mann, do you have any comments?
Yes, sir, please. I'm going to ask Planning Director Dunston to come to the podium and present the Planning Board's recommendation. Harris.
Thank you. Good evening, Council.
Good evening.
This is a request from the petitioner, Easton Pride, the developer for this property, to rezone for .43 acres to from industrial non-park to neighborhood business. It is in an area where it is adjacent to other B4 properties. It is a shopping center across the street with some other commercial uses across the street. There are no current commercial uses on this side of Andrews Avenue. So this is an opportunity. There is an adjacent lot directly in front of it that connects to Andrews Avenue. And this lot will give more developable room for development in this section. The owner of the property may in the future be looking to do other conversions from industrial uses to business uses. We have not heard those yet, but there is potential for that. This is also, if you notice, at the corner of the exit ramp from US 1 going north and Andrews Avenue, so it's a node. It's a business potential, commercial potential node in that area.
This from a more restrictive area, industrial, to a less restrictive area.
Right, and the neighborhood commercial use is designed for opportunities for businesses that could be frequented or used by the neighborhood, typically like stores or offices, that type of thing.
Aris, what was the planning board's recommendation in terms of this vote?
They recommended that this would be approved as a B4.
And I mean the strength of the vote.
It was a unanimous vote by the planning board. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was a unanimous vote by the planning board, and the developer did present at the planning board meeting.
Thank you, Aris. Does council have any questions? Or I'm going to have a public hearing. Go ahead.
Any permits would require and specify the type of screening between. It looks like these residences here on Old Street,
yes,
and the backside of any property that they develop.
Yes, any specific use permits would require the proper screening, the proper setbacks from those properties, but that would be based on the individual use of the property.
Thank you, Aris. I now open this public hearing to amend the zoning map off of Wilbur Street. If there's anyone present who wishes to speak in favor of this amendment, if so, please come forward, state your name and your address. Those who'd like to speak in favor of it. Seeing no one, then is anyone here who'd like to come and speak against this amendment? Please come forward. Seeing no one, I declare this public hearing closed and ask the council, what is your pleasure?
I introduce the ordinance 1411, amended zoning map.
Introduced by Mr. Dakey.
Second.
Second by Ms. Brenda Peace Jenkins. Madam Clerk, will you call the roll?
Mr. Kearney?
Aye.
Ms. Coffey?
Yes.
Mr. Inskeck?
Aye.
Ms. Peace Jenkins?
Yes.
Mr. Dakey?
Yes.
Ms. Simmons?
Yes.
Mr. Day?
Aye.
The next item is consideration of approval of Resolution 1413, The next item is public comment period on agenda items, and we have no one who wishes to address council, so we'll move on to new business. The first item being consideration of approval of Resolution 1412, approving an application to the North Carolina Governor's Highway Safety Program in the amount of $12,000 for North Carolina Governor's Highway Safety Program grant to fund police vehicle equipment.
Mr. Manager, you have.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, Police Chief Barrow is here. He has this one and the next item, so if he would come to the podium, both, Chief, and explain to council what you're seeking for the first one.
Good evening. For the first one, we're seeking 4 in-car mobile video systems. This is going in to replace a system that we currently have that's outdated and starting to have issues with. This is a match 50-50, so $12,000 of it will come out of asset forfeiture to match the $12,000 that they're offering.
Any questions, council?
Just a quick one. These are to replace older equipment?
Older equipment, yes, sir.
About how long, what is the lifetime expectancy on these cameras? I mean, when do you generally like to change them out?
Well, the life expectancy varies. All depends on the company. The company we were currently dealing with has switched hands, and their products are going out of warranty, and they're not offering the services that we need to repair them and fix them. This is a company that's been long-standing, and we currently have a few of these video cameras now. We actually installed the video cameras, this style video camera, in the newest cars we just purchased.
Chief, how many cars do you have in the fleet now that have this newer edition?
Currently, there are the two newest cars have this piece of equipment in it, and this will outfit the rest of the cars that we currently just purchased. And then we'll make it so we're able to replace a few of the ones that are in cars currently that are having some issues.
But all cars have it?
Well, patrol cars, yes.
One more question. Okay. What is the, and this is probably for Kathy, what is the balance of federal asset forfeiture right now?
It's above $400,000, our last total, not counting what we currently have in budget.
That's fine, thanks.
I believe it's somewhere around $450,000.
When do we receive that allocation each year for the monies that we may receive from asset forfeiture?
For asset forfeiture, it comes in periodically.
Just periodically. Mm-hmm.
We just had a cash advance of $9,000 over.
Based on when?
When they seize it. Whenever you time frame the process.
Correct.
It's always like Christmas when it comes in.
People are real broke lately.
They really are.
Any other questions for the chief? Thank you, Chief. Council, what's your pleasure?
Introduced Resolution 14.
Introduced by Ms. Hensko, second by Ms. Coffey.
Ms. Coffey?
Aye.
Mr. Hensko?
Aye.
Ms. Peace Jenkins?
Yes.
Mr. Dakey?
Yes.
Ms. Simmons?
Yes.
Mr. Day?
Aye.
And Mr. Kearney?
Yes.
And the motion passed.
Thank you. Stay well done.
The next item is consideration of approval of Resolution 1413. Authorizing a grant application to the North Carolina Governor's Crime Commission Program for the purchase of mobile data terminal computers and Viper interoperability radio system radios.
Mr. Manager, Marcus.
Chief is Chief. Ready to go.
No problem. We're looking at replacing 8 mobile data terminals and then 4 Viper compatible radios to be installed in the vehicles. This is we expend the money at first and then we get a reimbursement. It's a 75% reimbursement on this, so we'll see an expenditure of $7,969, and that will come out of asset book.
Council, you have any questions for the chief? What's your pleasure? Introduced by Ms. Coffin. Second by Mr. Day.
Mr. Ensko?
Aye.
Ms. Peace Jenkins?
Yes.
Mr. Dakey?
Yes.
Ms. Simmons?
Aye.
Mr. Day?
Aye.
Mr. Kearney?
Yes.
And Ms. Coffey?
Yes.
And the motion passed.
And that's the easy one to
find something else. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
you.
The next item is consideration of approval of Resolution 1414, providing for the disposition of jointly held property by the city and county otherwise identified as 777 Parkway Drive, tax parcel number 01040202015.
Mr. Manager, do you have any comments to bring us up to date on this?
Yes, sir. The county has received an offer to purchase this tract, and as it has done in prior cases, is asking the city to assign it to it so we can sell it This property, they have an offer of $2,000. The property on the tax books is valued at $42,148, and unpaid taxes upon the time of foreclosure was $4,130. That does not include, of course, the cost for the foreclosure attorney to foreclose and obtain the property for the city and county. There are no liens against the property, and the county would like to get this off the public dole and back onto the private listing, so hopefully maybe we can put it back in the tax-paying status in the future. The resolution that is crafted and attached here, too, is like the ones that you have approved previously for other lots that you have been asked to consider.
Counselor, you have any questions?
I do.
Mr. Mounder, yes.
What is Cross Street for Parkway? What is it? Where is it exactly?
Parkway. You remember where Mary Emma used to live?
Okay, down the very end.
That's Parkway, where it stops there at the traffic circle.
Okay.
And it goes on back in toward town.
Okay, I know where it is.
Is that by King's Door? Any other questions, comments?
Obviously, there's a building on it. I take it if the tax value is $42,000 plus.
I don't know.
Is it?
I think there is.
Probably cost more to tear it down than it's worth, actually.
But wouldn't they not have to pay the taxes? Wouldn't they have to pay the taxes in order to purchase the property?
No, ma'am. When the city and county foreclosed on the property for unpaid taxes, state law says whatever, once property is foreclosed, regardless of what is owed on it, that debt is considered forgiven. And that goes for any liens associated with it as well. So the key drive here, and we've had conversations with the county over the past year or so, is what can we do to get properties out of the responsibility of the city and the county, particularly if they have structures on it. And I should have known that, Mike. I appreciate you and Sarah bringing that affirmative answer to Mr. Kearney's question. But how do we get this back into hopefully a more productive tax-paying position rather than a liability for lot mowing and perhaps ultimate demolition at the public expense? And so if the house is as bad as you're saying, then part of the, Mike, you're shaking your head that it is or isn't, then this could be also one way that we could mitigate future costs by transferring that responsibility to the new private owner.
And the theory behind forgiving, use the word forgiving in quotes, the taxes when we acquire the property is that the taxes are supposed to represent a percentage of the value of the property, and we have an opportunity to get the whole property when we buy it. That's the theory behind it. Not always correct theory, but in practice it isn't always the correct theory, but that's the theory behind the law.
Looks good on paper.
Am I allowed to ask a question? I don't know how I stand. This building that's on this Parkway Drive address, has it been condemned? And if that person, if we agree to sell to them for $2,000, are we going to require that they clean it up?
I don't know if it's been condemned. Corey was putting this together for us last week, and he'd never mentioned that it was under condemnation. I had asked him, did it have any liens on it? Of course, he responded no in that, because sometimes we get this request with liens, and then we want to make sure we at least get a debt set up on it before it goes any further. But in terms of this, I do not know. I would have to ask him, and we'll be glad to do so for you.
But the mere fact that we sell it does not preclude us from placing a lien on or condemning it in the future if it isn't brought up to meet the codes.
Okay, no, we could do that.
It could be done in the future, yes. Okay.
I don't think it's any way to bring that up to meet codes.
Well,
it's
just, if it isn't brought up to meet codes, we could condemn it.
I don't want to lose the house. I don't
want to lose the house. Any other questions? What is y'all's pleasure?
I'll introduce it.
introduced by Ms. Pete Jenkins. Second by Mr. Insko. Madam Clerk.
Ms. Pete Jenkins?
Yes.
Mr. Dakey?
Yes.
Ms. Simmons?
Yes.
Mr. Day?
Aye.
Mr. Kearney?
Yes.
Ms. Coffey?
Yes.
And Mr. Insko?
Aye. Madam Clerk.
We'll move on to the next item, which is consideration of approval of Resolution 1415, authorizing the execution of quitclaim deeds for several properties outside city limits recorded in here as jointly owned city-county properties.
Mr. Manager?
Mr. Mayor, this is pretty much a housekeeping matter. The county is asking the city to allow a quitclaim so these deeds can be put in its name only and be sold, as they've had inquiries for the purchase of them. These lots are outside of the city limits and were erroneously recorded in both jurisdictions' name. And this really just corrects the record so they can proceed with business. The city attorney has reviewed this, and we recommend its approval.
Any questions?
Yeah. Has anybody been paying any taxes or anything on these?
I don't think they've been paying city taxes. They weren't supposed to be paying city taxes. Not the city.
Right, but that's why I was just wondering if, since it was in both names, if
I think they just bought it, they bid it in, and put the deed in both names erroneously.
Since the county does the foreclosure process, it's like, and I think what John is saying is true, they probably had several, some in the city and some in the county, and they just got caught up under one title.
Any other questions? What's your pleasure?
I'll introduce it.
Introduced by Mr. Kearney.
Second.
Second by Mr. Day.
Ms. Peace Jenkins?
Yes.
Mr. Dakey?
Yes.
Ms. Simmons?
Yes.
Mr. Day?
Aye.
Mr. Kearney?
Yes.
And Ms. Coffey?
Yes.
And Mr. Insko?
Aye. Madam Clerk?
The next item is consideration of approval of Resolution 1410A, approving an amended temporary construction easement allowing use of city-owned parking spaces by Variety Wholesalers, Inc.
Mr. Manager?
Mr. Mayor, I'm going to ask the city attorney to brief counsel on this, please.
Okay.
This came before you last meeting, and we thought that we had resolved the issues that were raised before that time. But since then, there have been a couple of issues that Variety has brought up that need to be clarified. None of them have any real adverse effect on the city, whatsoever you can see. Variety wanted, given embassy an easement for construction across its property on the corner of White and Lima Street. And Variety wanted to make sure they could cross that property and deliver heating oil. They've got a heating oil receptacle there. And also, embassies agreed to indemnify it for any damage it does to the property while they had it. The second amendment was, it says that Variety could use portions of the Perry Library parking lot. And the library and Variety are going to get together and limit that to 86 parking places, merely between the hours of 7 a.m. and 6 p.m. on Monday through Fridays, together with 5 undesignated parking places during other hours. And that, I think, is it limits what the Variety is getting, but I think that's in everybody's favor, and the library and Variety will work that out. And merely amends that so they can all sign this and have it all cleared up, hopefully begin construction.
Any questions, Council?
What was the number of parking spaces?
86
from the library.
My question, will those be confined to the parking lot of the library on the Lima Street side?
Yes, and then the library is getting the use of the parking on the other side of Breckenridge Street on the city's lot. We gave them that the embassy is going to improve, pave, and grade.
My concern is we weren't giving up some of the parking on Breckenridge that the library has next to the adjoining the parking lot that we're now going to be able to use.
Could be using some of that. Some of it will be taken by construction.
Right, but Variety will be using the wider side parking for the library in the lot.
86 spaces.
Any
one follow-up. Is it intended that they will use all 86, or they just mean they can park
anywhere? They say they use all 86 now. They may not use them every time because some sellers may be out of town or something, but they want them designated as their parking places. And the library has agreed to that, and so has the Embassy Foundation agreed. These will be designated for Variety during the period of time that Variety's old lot was being used by the Embassy. And they've got 86 spaces down there.
I thought it was more like 10 or 12 or something.
Well,
the last time.
They were reserving 10 or 12, the right to use them. The library was along the for that person.
I have one more question. John, you know, I guess my fear is, how will they be designated if they decide?
They're going to put signs on.
Will the say towing will be enforced? Or I would hate for library patrons to not realize and be towed by what is perceived as a library.
I have emphasized that and told them they need to put signs inside the library reminding patrons that if they park there, they could be subject to towing. That would be Variety's prerogative to tow them if they're in the parking place. But that would be their right, just like they've got the right in their present parking place to do. I know, and I was concerned about that too, but that's the only way they feel they can enforce it, get the use of it. And that's the only way they'll give Embassy the right to use their parking.
But would not Variety have to post?
Yes.
That cars are subject to tow, so there would be notice in the parking lot.
That definitely would be.
I just want to make sure that's clear, because I can see where some of our patrons are not be aware, at least in the beginning, and they for them to pull in and get towed when they're using the library.
This is about 7-8 times bigger than I thought it was. Any other questions? What is y'all's pleasure?
Introduce the resolution.
Introduced by Mr. Dakins. And second.
Second.
Second by Ms. Hinsko.
Mr. Dakey?
Yes.
Ms. Simmons?
Yes.
Mr. Day?
Aye.
Mr. Kearney?
Yes.
Ms. Coffey?
Yes.
Mr. Insko?
Aye.
And Ms. Feast-Jenkins?
Yes.
And the motion passed.
Ms. Parker, City Clerk, we're ready to proceed.
The next item is consideration of approval of Resolution 1406, approving a bid award to Turner Murphy Company, Inc., of Rock Hill, South Carolina, in the amount of $1,397,594 for improvements to the Sandy Creek Pump Station.
Mr. Manager, can you?
Yes, sir.
Bring us up to date.
As the Assistant Manager, Mr. Fraser, is coming forward, I will just say, thank goodness this is here tonight, because this pump station needs to be replaced. Frank, would you brief counsel on this for us, please?
Good evening. This is another one of our major infrastructure projects and that we've been working on with our engineers, and Tom and Doug Chapman is here with McGill tonight. And this is, as Mr. Griffin said, we're anxious to get moving with this project. And we did receive, this was $900,000 in principal forgiveness and $900,000 in 0% interest. So it's from the infrastructure finance section. What it involves is a major overhaul of the station. If you need any specifics as far as the station itself, Mr. Spain is here. And as Doug, as the engineer itself on the project, we did receive good bids for the project, and Turner Murphy is a contractor that we have done some work with before at the water plant, and so we're in a position to recommend the award. We are recommending an additional, when Tom and the engineers were going over this project, and with recommended an increase of $35,000 and some change to the piping. We're changing out of some 12-inch piping, 12x6, to 16-inch piping. We are certainly recommending we do that, and just believe that'll really future take us into years to come with the Sandy Creek Pump Station if we ever needed to upgrade that station. Again, at some point, upsize. We're recommending that the bid award in the amount of $1,397,594 to Turner Murphy of Rocky, out of Rocky, South Carolina.
Thank you, Frank. Any questions, counsel? What is your pleasure?
I'll introduce it.
Second. Introduced by Ms. Coffey, second by Mr. Daniel, resolution 1406.
Ms. Simmons?
Yes.
Mr. Day?
Aye.
Mr. Kearney?
Yes.
Ms. Coffey?
Yes.
Mr. Insto?
Aye.
Ms. Peace Jenkins?
Yes.
And Mr. Dakey?
Yes.
And the motion passed.
Ms. Mayor, before we move on to the next item, may I make a comment?
Sure.
This lift station was built in the late 70s, and much as our sewer plant was in dire need of renovation, so too is this. Now, I give you that background because imagine stuff that you just can't get off the ship anymore in service. We had an incident last week where we had a pump go out, and in that very cold and miserable weather, Tom Spain and his crew and Andy Perkinson and his crew teamed together to get the pump station back online. Tom, your email to me was at 1 o'clock in the morning, I think.
We got it back online at 11:20.
On that very cold, miserable Thursday night, I think it was. Wow. And so, number one, just to stress the really important need for this project and how thankful we are for McGill to help us find this money through the state and for council willing to go forward with it. And secondly, our employees out there in the middle of all of that inclement weather, fixing something to mitigate a problem, to help us avoid a huge problem with environmental issues, fixing things and helping us keep the system working until it can be repaired. And Tom, I'd like to thank you and your staff, as well as Andy and his, for the teamwork you exhibited and the partnership and just the oomph you all took to get that thing done without any argument, without anything other than you knew it had to be done and you did it. Thank you for a job well done.
Well, my staff deserves most of the credit because they know what they're doing, they're well trained, and they do it.
And who did Tom kick?
That's another story.
Please, Tom, please express our thanks to your staff and the job well done beyond call of duty. Madam Clerk?
The next item is consideration of denial of Ordinance 1360, amending the zoning ordinance section 408, exempt signs.
Mr. Manager?
Yes, sir. I'm going to ask Ms. Dunston. No?
She
slipped out. Okay, John.
We have been talking for a month or so about off-premises advertising for city-sponsored programs for signs. And I met with Eris, and I was looking for a place to put it in the zoning ordinance, and I ran across a provision that took care of it. And so we think it's redundant and it's not needed anymore. The city council can always modify that if they want to, but the redundant section is section 408 of the zoning ordinance that says, well, it's titled exempt signs. The zoning ordinance shall not apply to any governmental sponsored signs or sign placed in pursuant to a governmental sign program that has been approved by the city council. So each one of those things that are exempt would have to be come before the city council and be approved individually in any event. So that seems to eliminate the need to have another type of sign program that has to come before the city council of government signs. So I don't think any action is needed.
Well, what you have on the table is a recommendation from the planning board. And the planning board recommendations need to be dealt with up or down or tabled indefinitely. And the cleanest way to do it, since we already have an ordinance on the books, is just not to approve this ordinance. Then it goes away. There's a clear beginning and end point to the history of Ordinance 1360. And I would much prefer for the record keeping for a vote of denial or to not approve this ordinance.
And that's what the planning board recommended.
Yeah. And that way you dispense with the planning board matter and it doesn't remain in limbo.
You vote, what you actually voted for is the denial of the ordinance. So you vote no. The motion should say that if we deny this ordinance, then you vote in favor of that motion.
Right.
Any questions?
Yes means it's not going to be passed.
Yes means no.
Yes means no. So is there, do I hear a motion?
So moved.
That's made by Mr. Dakey to
deny ordinance 13.
Second by Ms. Sarah Coffin. Call the vote.
Mr. Day?
Aye.
Mr. Kearney?
Yes.
Ms. Coffey?
Yes.
Mr. Inskeff?
Aye.
Ms. Peace Jenkins?
Yes.
Mr. Dakey?
Yes.
And Ms. Simmons?
Yes.
And the motion passes to deny the ordinance.
Thank you. Madam Clerk?
Can I point up just a question? We will be getting some, I guess, recommendations to set it back from the planning board about the issues on the government side,
yes.
Based on the design stuff we had questions about.
Ms. Dustin advises me in February the planning board will be reviewing those design standards and will hopefully be reporting to you at the February work session on what those are looking like. And then that would come back probably, John, I guess, as a resolution in terms of setting forth a policy and how to implement this.
Well, probably put an amendment on that.
On the other ordinance.
But in the meantime, you have great flexibility in determining what standards you want to impose on any individual project.
Mr. Mayor, I might add that since we're going to have a chance to look at each one of them individually, that we can address our concerns individually at that time, unless we intend to review it and give further latitude to the departments or to the
good point.
So they can use it.
Thank you. Anyone else? Madam Clerk.
The next item is consideration of approval of Resolution 1407, authorizing the execution of change order number 2 for the Henderson Water Reclamation Facility Project to Devere Construction Company, Inc., in the amount of $25,206 in Ordinance 1408, Fiscal Year 14, Budget Amendment Number 24, amending the CIP Sewer Fund for change order number 2 to the Water Reclamation Facility Renovation Project.
Mr. Manager?
Mr. Mayor, change order 2 was distributed and is on the table in front of you. Distributed prior to tonight's meeting. I'll ask Mr. Frazier, he and Mr. Spain may want to tag team on this. The council did discuss this at the last meeting at the work session. If you have any questions, I know they'll be glad to respond to them.
I know what it was. Frank just wanted to see if I could walk in his boot. How y'all doing tonight? We had 9 items. Well, 8 that had a cost to them in this change order. The caustic injection manhole, we sized it up from 4 foot to 6 foot. So when you get in there, you got room to work because that caustic blows back. You can get yourself hurt bad. Headworks, bolted adjustment, that's well worth it. It'll protect the equipment. It's not going to be that expensive. Administration building termite treatment. They treated the entire building, and I think that was a county requirement, my understanding, that it had to be done. That wasn't something that we chose to do. But and we relocated the existing at IPS. And manhole number 3, that was one that was changed out to a 10-foot diameter manhole. It was an 8-foot because the 2 pipes coming into the plant couldn't fit into that manhole without butting against each other. They needed an extra room in there. If it had been a little bit different angle, we could have used the 8 and not had to go with the 10. In the rebar change, we had some rebar that we got credit for that wasn't installed. That was $6,394. And shrinkage reducer, we got some credit for shrinkage reducer that wasn't needed. And then deleted square dowels. There were some dowels that were not needed, so we got credit on that. When you balance the whole the books with the credits and the expenses, we've got $24,204.76 for the change orders. I recommend these very much. I don't. These are not excessively expensive. They were necessary to be done. These are the type of things you expect to see in change orders as you go down through a project. These kind of things are going to happen.
Any questions for Tom?
One, about what percentage of the total project would you say is complete construction?
Doug, you
probably about 30%.
Yeah, that's what I would say, because so much of it is partially complete and we're not getting credit for it.
Just one clarification. The clerk passed out the change order tonight. McGill received it today, and a little bit of reduction in the price, which is good. It's about $1,000 less. So
I had that right here. I written it in. I forgot to tell you.
Well, just give us the good news.
So, what is the price?
$24,204.76.
Mr. Mayor, I would like the council is favorable of approving this to add to the motion that the change order be approved in this reduced amount,
right,
and that the staff be authorized to change the contract information and the budget ordinance accordingly.
My understanding. Any questions?
I'll introduce it as stated by the mayor.
Would they correct it?
I'll second it.
Second by Ms. Call. Call the roll.
Mr. Kearney?
Yes.
Ms. Coffey?
Yes.
Mr. Inskeff?
Right.
Ms. Peace Jenkins?
Yes.
Mr. Dagey?
Yes.
Ms. Simmons?
Yes.
And Mr. Day?
Aye. Tab.
The last item under new business is consideration of approval of tax releases and refunds from Vance County for the months of November and December 2013.
Mr. Manager?
Mr. Mayor,
do you have any comments?
The error that was discovered on this at the last meeting has been corrected and is brought back for your consideration this evening.
Can you speak up, Mr. Day?
I'll introduce Rizley.
Introduced by Mr. Day. Is there a second? Second by Mr. Day.
Can you tell him what happened? It was just that one bottom line got omitted when we were reprinting. I apologize. I did not catch it. We had November, and then when we did December, we decided to combine them, and when reprinting, that
$4,996 got omitted, and I
apologize
for not catching that. I didn't look at it again. It was on the original.
Thank you.
Ms. Coffey? Yes.
Mr. Inskeff?
Yes.
Ms. Peace Jenkins?
Yes.
Mr. Dagey?
Yes.
Ms. Simmons?
Yes.
Mr. Day?
Aye.
And Mr. Kearney?
Yes.
Madam Clerk?
The next item is public comment period on non-agenda items. And again, no one has signed up to address council, so we'll move on to reports. Mayor Pro Tem.
Well, I'll say the main thing is the mayor and his medical situation. But again, I'd like to repeat, just please keep Pete in your prayers and so forth. His thing was a little mixed up. He has yet to have his surgery as it was printed, but he has not. He is scheduled for this coming Monday, February 3rd, and they're optimistic. So he's optimistic, and he stopped by the office today. He's not supposed to be leaving, but anyway, we keep him in our prayers, and also those who we have our Chamber of Commerce dinner tomorrow night.
Yes, sir.
And we hope to be there.
6:30 and not to step in between other people, but the doors will open at 5:45.
That's all I got.
I just want to commend Councilwoman Sarah Coffey for filling in for the mayor at the Martin Luther King breakfast celebration at Spring Street. She did a wonderful job, and she spoke very well and gave the regrets of the mayor. So I just want to let everybody know she did good.
I preach.
Thank you.
City manager?
It's good to be back. And I want to thank each of you for your cards, your prayers, your text messages. I want to particularly thank Frank, who in my absence had another full-time job on top of the already two full-time jobs that he is doing. And so, Frank, thank you so much. He just really does a stellar job. We're very fortunate to have him on the team. I want to thank Pat Pearson from my office, who made sure I was in the loop, and she kept emailing things for me to do so I wouldn't get bored while I was home. And what she didn't do, Esther finished. So I was away, but I was still here, and it's really good to know one can be away and have such competent staff working that you feel okay about being away. So thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for a job well done. And looking forward to getting back in the groove with you.
Ray, I've always said if you want something done, give it to somebody who's doing something. Right. But I guess Frank said there is a limit to the number of jobs, and he did three well. Don't try five.
I will tell you, I suggested to him when we were discussing his budget, was it about a week or so ago, when we were going through budget, we said, Frank, how about if you do the budget for me this year? He said, I'll draw the line right there.
It is a pleasure.
And we'll see that pay raise in our budget this year. Don't
worry. City attorney.
I have nothing.
I have.
City manager here.
I have two other things. Don't forget the polar plunge that the Parks and Recreation are doing on February 8th at Satterwhite Glass House. And for those of you who have not responded regarding the Service Awards banquet on March 6th, the Human Resources Department would really like to hear from you so they can provide a headcount to the country club. And I'd be happy to relay it, or you can call Human Resources. And with that, I believe we can move on to closed session.
Do we hear a motion to go out of this meeting into closed session?
Second.
All in favor? Aye. All right. Go to court. There will be no announcement. We go to the. Do I hear a motion? We go out of closed session and.
So moved.
Second. Motion made by Mr. Kearney, second by Mr. Day. All in favor?
Aye.
All in favor? We got a work session.
No, actually, you have to adjourn from this one.
We have to adjourn from this
one? You have to adjourn from this one, and then you have to.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Madam.
You're welcome. Sorry.
I have a motion made by Ms. Deakins to adjourn to the regular meeting. Is that a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Day. All in favor?
Aye.
Now you get to call the work session to order.
I'd call the work session. Ask the City Council to order and ask Madam Secretary to call the roll.
Mr. Green?
Here.
Ms. Coffey?
Here.
Mr. Inska?
Here.
Ms. Jenkins?
Here.
Mr. Dakey?
Here.
Ms. Simmons?
Here.
And Mr. Day?
Here.
Anyone here? Turn it over to you, please.
Okay, the first item is adjustments to and or approval of the agenda.
Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Motion by Mr. Dakey. Second by Ms. Brenda P. Jenkins. All in favor?
Aye.
So we'll move on to the first item under the regular work session, which is consideration of approval of Resolution 1411, awarding contract for David Avenue Sewer Storm Replacement Project in the amount of $31,422 to MT Murphy, Inc.
Mr. Manager, could you bring us up to date on this?
Yes, sir. I'm going to ask Mr. Fraser. Pete, I didn't see you there. I'm going to ask the city engineer, Mr. Sikowski, to come to the podium. Pete?
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
Good evening.
This is a project that's been a long time coming. We've had an issue with this particular place. We found about this particular place earlier this past year on 2013. This is a project to award contract to NT Murphy Incorporated, which is a contractor based out of Raleigh, for the David Avenue Stormwater Replacement Project in the amount of $31,422. There was some pipe failure, storm drying pipe failure across the land located at 1257 David Avenue. And it is potentially damaging the property. It is damaging the gentleman's driveway. If we leave it alone or do not hurry up and actually correct the situation, there's a potential it could affect this foundation as well. So this is something that is very significant. We need to go ahead and make sure that we go ahead and repair that. The drainage pipe is located actually within a drainage easement. It is not on the street. It is through the property. Close to the property line for the gentleman. And it runs between the two properties of 1257 and 1265 David Avenue. We do have an easement. The easement is located, is written in the CAF as a deed book 466, page 636. This, I do believe the easement was written and completed for the Henderson Mall project many moons ago. So this was done a long time ago.
Pete, if I could inject something here.
Yes, sir.
Many members of council receive from time to time concerns about storm drainage issues on private property. And then we say, well, we can't deal with it because it's private property. Unlike that, which is in a good many of the cases, this is one where we actually accepted an easement back when that project was done, as you said, many moons ago. I guess it dates back to the 70s or 60s. And as a result, then we have a legal obligation to deal with the maintenance on it since we accepted the ownership of the pipe at the time that project was done. And so you may get a question, well, why did you do that pipe and not my pipe? Well, the difference is, this is our pipe because we have the easement for it versus that's your pipe because we don't have the easement for it. And I know you may get some questions on this as this works its way forward. And I want you to understand that differential in terms of why we're coming forward with this versus ones that we have just said we can't come forward with.
The project was let out as an informal bid. We had five contractors submit bids. MT Murphy was the apparent bidder with the base bid of $34,734. However, with a little bit of negotiations with them and some material changes in the pipe systems and the way that we were going to actually install the project, we had a $3,312 savings to $31,422. We're taking it out of the existing line item from the Public Services Department for the storm drain line improvements. However, the existing funds is only $20,000 in there. So as part of this, we're doing a budget transfer from the street resurfacing budget line item for $13,000 just to give us a little bit of a cushion for a total of $33,000 in the account in that particular line item for this project. And we are requesting approval for the contract to proceed on with the project.
Any questions?
Just one. Where is this drainage pipe? What is it drained? Is it a creek down further?
It goes down and ties into an existing ditch. Yes, sir.
I have a question. Was MT Murphy the only company that bid on this?
No, there were five companies that bid on this project.
I'm sorry, I missed that.
We had five, and we also looked at had a firm up here that does rehab on pipe to see if we could rehab it internally without doing a lot of driveway and concrete repaired. Some of it was pretty favorable, but there was still a certain amount of footage we'd still have to replace no matter what, so it kind of knocked that part out. But we looked at it as an alternative just to see. This was the cheapest, I felt like would be the most economical route to get it done.
Pete, did you have any local contractors bid on this?
Yes, sir. We had H.G. Reynolds bid on it.
My understanding, talking to the manager on these bids, we had to go with the lowest bid. Is that correct?
That is the typical, yes.
I don't think that we have to do that, actually. Do we? I mean,
if it's an informal bid, we can negotiate with the bidders, but it is the norm to go with the lowest apparent bidder.
Lowest responsible.
That's correct. Yes, sir. Lowest responsible. Thank you for the correction.
What is the consensus on this?
I have a question.
Yes, fine. Sorry, Ms. Simmons.
I remember you saying, what happens if this comes up again with another property owner for an existing drain that was placed in by the city?
If it is in an easement, mm-hmm. like this one, we are responsible. Much as if we have an issue with street pavement that may wash away, we have to fix it. And so if another easement comes up that has a disruption in the storm drive, then we'll have to deal with it like we're having to deal with this.
Okay.
And what's pushing this, and Pete, correct me, but I remember the briefings you and Frank have given me over the last couple of months on this, is it is now damaging private property. It's not just open land that's maybe eroding. And so that then brings into a specter of greater potential for damage and loss that the city would have to deal with if you don't fix it.
And this funding is also includes repairs to private property.
It is to repair some of the storm drain lines, and he has roof drains coming through that's going to be damaged, as well as the driveway. Yes, sir.
Mr. Kearney?
Yes. You say that if we own the easement, we're responsible. What if we put the pipe in and didn't have an easement? Are we then responsible?
That's a very good question, and that's one that we would have to ask Mr. Zala Carpenter to reinforce. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the city has had the long-standing position, as I think most cities do. If we do not have an easement, we don't own it, and we don't repair it. And we don't know what the circumstances may have been. If the city put some pipe in for someone, was it you pay for the pipe, we'll put it in, but we didn't accept maintenance on it as it went forward. I don't know what those circumstances might be. But that would be a good question for us to pose with the attorney if you would like for us
and
to
And we guess. Really do need to pose that question, don't we, Mr. Frazier?
Well, it's been a question that's been here since I've been here.
Yeah, you remember? But, I have the same problems.
Typically, because I've talked to John about this in the past, and there were some pipes that the city went through and put through, but there was never any recorded easement or with the understanding that we were putting it in as a service, but we were not accepting any maintenance on it. But we haven't done that practice in a long time as far as putting in pipes outside of the street right away. You know, we still have to put them in the street right away.
Let me ask you, I'm aware of some of these have come for us way back. If the city had put in a pipe somewhere and no easement's recorded, and after several times the properties change hands, it's likely that an owner would not even realize that was the case, right? It wouldn't be recorded.
That's right.
It's like, and I've run into those, and I've run into them in my ward with people where the city agreed to tie in the drainage system into an existing pipe on somebody's land. And, you know, again, it works for everyone, but when this pipe goes, it's not the city's responsibility. We've had some where we actually, years ago, put in a pipe to rectify a situation, but said that we would not accept it, and those owners were fine with that. But I think properties change hands; it's not recorded somewhere.
And of course, too, we run into a lot of properties that were developed where the property owner put the pipe in to build a house or whatever. And you know, I wouldn't say And there have been some cases that where it was proven that the city did not put the pipe in, so we weren't responsible for it being under the house. I mean, there were actual cases where it was under a house, which is not a good situation. But, you know, the city certainly didn't go in and put the pipe in, you know, after the house was built. So that's what we, the premise we've been going on for years. But it is something that probably needs some clarification. I mean, just to, where everybody's on the same, because this one actually, too, has a sanitary sewer that runs through it also, right next horizontal with it. Sanitary sewer, that's how we actually found the condition of the pipe. I've been looking for a manhole with our crew for years, and we finally found it on the driveway. It's about 2 feet under the driveway. Nobody had been in there in years. So when we dug that up, found the manhole, and then we looked in the storm drain pipe, and that's how we found the condition of this. Mm-hmm. So it's just something that needs to be done.
Yes, sir. I would think, though, in those situations where it's pretty clear that we put the pipe in and somebody didn't follow through with the paperwork to get it right, that as a body, that we share some obligation at least to find some way to mitigate these situations. I don't say we take full responsibility, but there ought to be some way that we can meet some of those situations part of the way. If it is not a cash matter, maybe it's an in-kind matter or something.
It's a huge cash matter, because usually what we're seeing when we get a complaint is the pipe needs replacing. There needs to be work done on it, and sometimes it may be a small amount, and sometimes it's a large amount. We'll ask John Z for clarification on the question that's asked about what happens if the pipe that we may have put in or people have put in or what have you. But it is a huge budgetary issue, because we have storm drainage issues all over the city. And it's something that deserves a considered balance, a review on the thing. Because if you're not careful, you will be accepting a liability and a budgetary expense that I'm not sure we're prepared to deal with. And I speak that because, I mean, we can't even pave streets. And this takes up all of our budget for storm drainage improvements for this fiscal year. And so it is a huge issue on many levels. And what you pointed out is one of those important levels of concern. And we'll get this for you, but I think it's something we really need to speak with the attorney with and understand the legal requirements versus then the policy options council has. And ultimately, council makes the decision where it wants to go.
Right. That's what I was getting at, that we had a work session or somehow hammer out some kind of a policy position, mm-hmm. that we don't just walk away and say, no, it's not my job, if in fact we were complicit in it being there in the first place. I don't say responsible. I don't want to get us in any legal position, but I'm thinking about there's some moral responsibility to live up to and fix some of the things that we helped cause.
I understand what you're saying. I know way back, more decades ago than I care to remember, when I was new in the profession, we would have people say, well, if you'll put this pipe in for me, then I'll appreciate that, and I don't want you to take care of it. And the city would say, okay. The whole issue of liabilities and responsibilities were far different back in the 70s and early 80s than it is today. And so part of what I think, and this is where the attorney can help us, is understand those time frames in which decisions were made in one era versus where we are today, where you're still trying to strike what is the balance of fairness. And it's not going to be a difficult balance to find, but I think the discussion is going to be good, because we get a lot of these calls. Every month we get calls from people, like, can you fix this, can you fix that? And Frank does extensive work to find, do we have the easement? Have we been maintaining this? There's been no maintenance by the city over a protracted period of time, and there's no easement, that's our clue that this is not the city's responsibility. And but I'll get with John and Frank, and we'll work up something and bring back to you for further discussion.
Yeah, because we're not going to find out about it unless it's broken anyway. I mean, as long as everything's going well with it, nobody's going to come to us and, you know, thank us. You know, we're going to find that out when it's broken.
Thank you. I still need a consensus on the consideration of this resolution here for David Avenue. So, Mr. Kearney?
I'm finished.
No, I mean,
you want to
approve
what? Yes, I don't think we have any choice here. It's clear that that's our responsibility.
Yes. Gary, Ms. Simmons? Yes. We have a majority. Item B.
Recreation Master Plan Update.
Mr. Mantle, should we call?
We have Mr. Gill and Chairman Oxendine, and I think our car partners here. Alan, would you just like to maybe just stand up for a moment, permission to introduce our guests formally and where we're headed as a precessor, a precursor into the report?
Good evening, Council.
Good evening.
On behalf of the staff, I'd like to say thank you for supporting our comprehensive master plan development. The department's never had one. We did find an old copy of one from the 50s that was done by the city council. Never anything happened with it. Done from a firm in Atlanta that was doing a lot of master plans for towns that were starting departments. What did we find the cost on that? It was about $3,000 back then.
Yeah.
Some interesting things in there. But we're working closely with the COG staff and have been since the 1st of October on developing our plan. Mr. Will Brooks is the planner with the COG that's leading our effort. And he's going to give you an update in just a second on where we are, what's coming up, and the timeline that we're looking at on getting this done. The Recreation Commission has a subcommittee that they formed to work with Mr. Brooks so that if things need approval, that can get done quickly. Mr. Oxendine is the chair, and he has graciously agreed to defer his comments so that Mr. Brooks could have more time tonight.
Thank you.
So, with that,
thank you,
with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Brooks. I think he's got a few things he wants to cover.
Thank you.
Good evening, everyone. Again, my name is Will Brooks. I'm a regional planner with Carthar Regional Council here in Henderson. And as Alan said about the plan, this is a complete rewrite because the other plan is a bit antiquated, so it is a pretty big project. And the objective of the overall project is to have a comprehensive master plan that roughly will guide pre-development and additional development for focus areas that we find, parks, improvements, facilities, and programming, roughly up until 2030. About 15 years I've found to be the average for a plan like this. And the project started with the creation of a community survey that went out online and in paper format back beginning of November. And as of today, we've had 159 either completed online on SurveyMonkey or on paper formats, and so pretty good return on that. And it'll be closing this Friday the 31st. That'll be right at 3 months that the survey was offered. And again, with the information we have so far, I think that'll be a good key component towards including it as a big piece into writing this plan. Again, with the survey data, we want to capture as much local impact, local information as possible, specifically about demographic information in this area from a different perspective. Coupled with that will also be a lot of state data about demographics of the county and of City of Henderson, so we can kind of have two different viewpoints of what everything looks like. There's four really components that go into a Parks and Recreation comprehensive plan. Survey data being a very important one, demographic information, The Recreation Board and community meetings will definitely help guide a lot of the focus areas in the project and best practices in Parks and Recreation. There's a several national and a state council that has recommendations, for example, open space guidelines, things like that, that I'll definitely want to try to incorporate. The comprehensive plan will have long-term goals. It will have milestones. It will have indicators. The idea is for it to be strategic in nature, where we're focusing more on the big picture and not the day-to-day stuff. The draft of the plan, I hope to have the REC Advisory Board sometime in May or perhaps early June. From there, after their consideration and feedback, would like to have a draft to go to council by end of June or perhaps in July for adoption. The contract states June 30th, so we try to keep to that timeline. And a scope of work, I think, went out previously. Maybe it should be in the packet. I believe I saw kind of how the project is being broken up. But essentially, after the survey data, the survey is closed, and we, myself and a couple others, have time to sit down and analyze that, propose it to the Recreation Board, and go from there. We'll really be able to start writing the big portions of this plan and be able to pass that along to you guys as we go. So happy to take any questions or comments you may have.
Any questions?
Gary? Yeah, you said 159 surveys, and I know you got some data there. Vance County has, I don't know, 45,000 people? Or is that approximate number? So we're talking about
a third
of 1%? Mm-hmm. I realize we don't get a lot of response, but how do you guys feel about that kind of response?
Well, it's only one piece in it, so that's a part of it. To be honest, I called around. I have several areas that have done surveys recently. I called Burlington. I called Oxford. I called Roxborough, Person County. And two of which did do a survey kind of similar to this. And it was about right on line, maybe a little bit less. Burlington had about 250 responses. And keep in mind, theirs is just the city and not Alamance County as well. Oxford's was about 7 or 8 years ago, but they did have a survey piece as well. It was offered online, but I think more of theirs was paper-based, the way it sounded. And I thought we'd get a response weight a little bit higher. 157 is, it's good in some respects, but yeah, when you're talking about proportion of population, it's not capturing as much as you want. One thing that we'll be able to look at in the analysis is we asked a question on there based on school districts where they lived, and that question's had a really good response rate, about 95% of everyone who took it. So we can kind of look around in different areas in the county and see, okay, well, they give us an idea of where people, these groups that took it, live, and kind of get a little bit more information from that.
My kind of follow up, as far as the paper surveys, where were those? Were they put out in different parts? For example, just in my mind, maybe if we had them out at school systems for parents to pick up, they would have gotten to each district. Or, I mean, I don't know. I'm not a whiz on surveys, but I guess 159, I was hoping for 500 or plus more.
I can address that for you. We had the paper copies at the rec center, senior center, and the library. The school system emailed the link to the survey website to us, to all their staff and all of the parents in the database that they have that they operate off of. And then we also mailed out postcards to all of our participants and all of our databases. So that was a fair amount.
Yeah, I think we ran it eight size page ad in the Daily Dispatch, Henderson Dispatch. 4 days, tried to encourage people to take it there too.
Is there any link on the city website? I don't know what kind of hits we get on the city website, but that was certainly
supposed to be, yes. Yeah. And then we also took the postcard size flyers to all of the middle and elementary schools to give out to the classrooms. The high school students have laptops with the school email account, so they emailed it to those.
It's kind of like they're voting.
I guess one other part, we considered stretching it out any further to see if we get more, so do anything particular, or we think
that's definitely an option. But
as far as the timeline, I would love to try to get a few hundred more than we have, but I'm not a survey expert. If we get what we get, do we feel like this may give us what we need to do a plan that's comprehensive?
Well, may know more when we look into it, and it's definitely, of course, if you want to extend it, that can be done. That'll just put a little bit more of a crunch on time in actually writing the plan, because that's going to take, that's not what I'm doing all the time, so it's one of my tasks, and it could definitely be done, but we may have to extend the timeline before we have the plan to adopt.
I'll ask one question. Do we have something we're planning to have this for in terms of funding? Is this going to get into a funding cycle, something we're looking to use it for that we know already? A plan that's part of a grant proposal? And getting more surveys may interrupt that. I guess that's what I'm asking.
No, not immediately. But once we have the plan complete, that will help us greatly on
absolutely
grant.
It's nothing pending that we need to hurry for. And I'm not saying we should extend. I guess like 150, I don't know.
That doesn't sound like a lot.
Doesn't sound like a lot. I'll put that one.
Mr. Kearney, you have a question?
Yes, sir. Your online survey, can it be completed online and return to you, or you've got to print it out and send it to paper?
They can take it fully online.
Okay, that's good. That might be the way that you can save some time with an additional push, if you would, to try to get some online responses. My questions are, how are you dealing with community parks, community recreation sites? Is the plan going to allow for some partnering with churches, with other nonprofits, with Boy Scouts, or whatever that might want to be involved in that?
The scope of work asks that we have a section that shows recommendations and how would we prioritize partnerships within the community. So that will be a piece.
Any other questions, comments? Thank you.
And also, we'll be holding a community input meeting evening February 4th at the Prairie Library at 6 p.m. And included that in the calendar, and that'll be a piece also included in this plan to get more input.
You need to get the word out. You want to show up. If you only got 159, but all that stuff, you have more than that to participate at the recreation center. You need to get the word out. Thank you, Madam Clerk.
The last item in the work session is financial report, the first 6 months of fiscal year 2014.
I guess we called Ms. KB up.
Yes, sir.
Right. You'd like to shed a little light on?
I'm going to try. Good evening. Before we look at the financial report for the last 6 months, I wanted to share this this page on the which shows you the fund balance in our general fund at the end of fiscal year 13 compared to fiscal year 12. I know you know, as sort of following up with the article that was in the paper. We didn't actually just find $1 million under our seats. our total fund balance actually, in the general fund, actually increased only $316,000. I mean, we were glad to have that, but it's a far cry from a million. And if you look, it's the way that the fund balance is broken down by the categories. We had some decreases in the restricted fund balances and the assigned fund balances, which made the unassigned fund balance grow. But overall, it was an increase of $316,000. And I don't know if this will help clear that up or make, you know, help it make a little more sense, but I did want to share that with you. And under the restricted, you'll see the various categories, and they are stabilization by state statute, which includes some accounts receivable, due from other governments, and due from other funds, and then, of course, your asset forfeitures and your power bill monies. And then the assigned are what we appropriate at budget time, the fund balance that we appropriate for subsequent years' expenditures. And all four of these categories declined from 12 to 13, which, as I said, in turn made our unassigned larger. Okay.
Any questions so far?
No. We can see the difference between 300,000 and a million.
a rough week, yeah.
My bad.
$700,000.
Okay. I apologize. I know I've been here 2 years now. This is the first time I've really tried to put together a little financial report. And so, I apologize that it took so long. But in the papers that you have, the first page is just a summary of the revenues and expenditures in each of the major funds. And it shows you the actual amounts in those at each category in, at the end of fiscal 12-13. Our budgeted numbers for this current fiscal year and the actual receipts or expenditures as of December 31st of 2013. So in essence, 6 months. And on the some of the ones that I sort of wanted to elaborate on were on the some charts and graphs that are attached also, but sales taxes comprise an estimated 16% of our general fund budget, and we have been, you know, tried to be very conservative with our budgets, and there's been some improvement in the economy, and you know, this has resulted in sales tax revenues exceeded budget estimates for the past two fiscal years. Sales tax revenues are received 2 months after the month for which they are collected by the state. So in other words, the July sales tax we receive in September, August, and October, etc. So at December 31st, we have received 4 months of sales tax revenues. The May and June sales taxes, which will come in July and August, will be accrued and will and you know put back into the fiscal year, but we won't know those until you know 2 months after the, or 3 months after the end of the fiscal year. But the first 6 months, two quarters of fiscal year 14, of course, you know, reflect the receipts of 4 months of sales tax revenue. And budget estimates based on historical monthly trend data for the past several years indicate that 34.19% of revenues would be received by the end of December. And our actual July to October sales tax revenues received as of December 31st exceed our estimated budget receipts by approximately $6,900. So at least we didn't go down. And if we move on to the current year property taxes, the property taxes are the largest single revenue source for the general fund and comprise 37% of the general of the current year general fund revenues. More conservative budgeting helped realign revenue expectations with reality, thus resulting in fiscal 12 figures coming in slightly above budget estimate, and the 13th fiscal 13 receipts were higher than budget due to Mariah Parent Medical Center paying taxes for the first time since it became a public nonprofit entity. The tax values assigned to it by the tax collector are still being challenged, And once the state makes its determination, the revenue estimates for fiscal 14 will either be confirmed or have to be adjusted downward. And additionally, the large increase in estimated revenues is also, you know, based on the 3.5 cent tax increase and minimal natural growth. Current year property tax revenues for the first two quarters of fiscal 14 reveal revenues are exceeding expected revenues by a little over $1.5 million. But don't get it real excited, because part of this is a timing issue. We have the county. We have asked the county is now paying us once a month rather than a daily check, and it helps make the reconciliation of our taxes to their reports easier. And in fiscal 13, part of the December tax collections were, since they were done daily, were reflected in on the, like, the deposits for the first two or three days in January, whereas on the fiscal, on this current report, the whole December, the taxes that were received in December are accrued and included in this number. So we expect the collections in January to be down versus to help offset this. It's not that much of an increase. It's just a timing issue.
And another thing that affected this was last year, the Mariah Parham property tax did not come in until June. And so the average that you see that developed the budget projection was done so without the Mariah Parham in the first 6 months. And so, of course, they paid in the first 6 months here, which is part of that. Now, next year, as these numbers begin to align better, you won't see such a huge variance because of the process change and the hospital being on target in the estimates.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
If you could would entertain a question on property tax at this point. I noticed that we now have, through the end of December, about 77% of what we have projected. Does that mean that roughly the other 27%, 23% is now delinquent, and we should get probably another 20% of that by the end of the fiscal year to get our, what, 93 point something percent collection rate?
Most of the collections come during the second and third quarter, which would be the January, February, March. So we could still see and expect to see most of the remainder come in.
Between now and the time it's advertised in the paper, I would say. Does that have any? I'm assuming that what we have not collected is now delinquent as of January 6th or 7th or something like that. Is that correct?
But
we're going to get a lot more of it between now and, say,
right,
May.
And then, of course, this doesn't reflect what has come in and during those the first week in January either. But
and you're correct. And anything that is collected after the due date would be counted. Also would be subject to penalty and interest on those collections.
So typically what comes in the last week of the tax year, in this case, it's the first week in January.
By the time you get it.
Yes, typically industry and businesses pay their taxes basically that last week.
Right. So and if they're mailed also, yeah.
Right. Part of this graph, and with the historic, with the budget thing, and you look at last year, fiscal 10-11 and fiscal 11-12, you see the actuals where quarter one is always very low. Quarter two and quarter three are generally very high, and then it drops again for quarter four. And so what we'll do as we're doing our budgeting, particularly as we're looking at how we're going to end this year, we will be doing internal estimates and projections through finance to see where does it look like we're going to be on target with these revenues for closeout of this year, which helps us then base estimates for next year.
Any other questions or comments?
I'm got one last thing that I wanted to mention, and I wish that I had included it as part of my report, and I will going forward, but it's I just wanted to mention the administrative transfers that are made throughout the year, in which Mr. Griffin and I both have to approve. But Part 4, Section 20 of the annual budget ordinance states that the city manager shall be authorized to reallocate departmental appropriations among the various objects of expenditures within any budget department as he deems appropriate and necessary. And additionally, he shall be authorized to reallocate departmental appropriations among other departments within the same fund via an intra-fund transfer as he deems appropriate and necessary. And notation of such appropriations shall be made to the City Council on the next financial report. All intra-fund transfers must also be approved in advance by the Finance Director. As of December 31st, there were 36 of these transfers. The transfers are for various reasons, such as moving funds from salaries in a department that has a vacancy to the overtime account when excessive hours are required as a result of a water leak and or repair that happened in the one of the water departments, or moving funds between line items in an effort to realign accounts to a reporting format that makes more sense and provides for consistency, or once the city pays our large insurance expenses like workers' comp or general liability, we transfer any excess insurance funds to a reserve within the non-departmental department of each fund, sort of to keep those for emergencies, and so that the departments won't spend those. But we never transfer funds from contingency line items on a budget transfer. Those are always processed with a budget amendment and brought before you at a council meeting for your approval prior to processing. And we also never transfer funds between funds. Those types of transactions would also be processed with a budget amendment and brought before you for your approval prior to processing. And if you all would like many more details on the transfers, I can provide you copies of them. But if you all just let me know what else you might need or want, and if there's anything else that you might like to see in the report, if you let me know, I'll try to incorporate that.
Colonel, one thing I think that I like to see is that I've been looking at your percent collected and the amount of expenditure that has been accrued to the date. If there's something that jumps out at you that looks like, if I look at our previous license, we only got 40% of that, and we're halfway through, but that could be a timing issue. Doesn't mean that there are people who have not paid and may not have come due in that time frame. But if it's something that jumps out at you, is this sort of highlight and tells, because sometimes that doesn't give you the whole picture. But you will know specifically what's behind it.
Those typically are issued in May.
In May, and due in June.
And due in June. So that, and the things that are there, I'm not sure if that's because of a lag from last year or if it's a new business that has come in. I would have to.
Typically, it's just very low until the fourth quarter. But Mr. Kearney, that's one of the reasons you're starting to see these graphs showing a budget and what we would expect. And on these are actually even broken down on a micro level to the monthly basis on what we would expect on a monthly, on the leading revenue indicators. And as we are able to expand those, it gives us the reporting mechanism to council, so you can see during your reports like she's doing now. It helps us on a day-to-day basis to see. Well, I remember when we were in the midst of the recession, when we were told it was over, our sales taxes were still going down. And I don't know if you were on council at that time, but because the sales tax was the first one we had broken out like this. Actually, council may remember, we actually came in and we reduced the budget appropriation for revenues for sales taxes. And we cut expenses because we knew we were not going to make it.
I did notice, Kathy, that the motor vehicle taxes, 90% or 91% collection. That's good. And that's due to people who got to pay the tax before they get tagged.
Yeah, that was 83% right here. Right?
That was a good law for us.
Very good.
Any other comments or questions? Thank you for your patience and with me tonight. Just keep the man in mind and in prayer. Do I hear a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second. Leon.
Mr. Lamont, call for a second by me.
I'll second. If you haven't already.